Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, what do you got there?
This is the new Ping G430 Max 10K driver. It's next level, I'll tell you. It's so impressive. We all know that Ping help you play your best. I've been using them for years, and I wouldn't use anything else. In fact, this new driver, it's Ping's straightest and highest moment of impact driver ever.
Holy moly. So on the course, what's that going to mean? How's it going to help golfers?
Well, to put it simply, it means people are going to be hitting longer, straighter, and they're going to absolutely crack their drives off the tee. I could talk about it all day. It's that good. But the best thing to do, if you want to check out how impressive Ping's new G430 Max 10K driver is, just book in with your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting, and I'll see you out there with my Ping gear.
It's week 11 of the golfing year, and this week, Nick Ahern is coming live from New Zealand, and Mark Allen from the Australian Golf Centre, home of Golf Australia and the PGA of Australia. Thanks to the team at Ping, they'll help you play your best. You can see your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting. And to the Golf Clearance Outlet, they're in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, and online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Okay, let's go. Nick Ahern and Mark Allen, the number one Australian golf podcast. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
So I'm right here at Golf Australia headquarters, and Nick Ahern, that lucky bugger, is over at Tara Eady. Now, Dan, I'm not sure whether he's played Tara Eady yet. I know he's played a couple of rounds maybe at the other golf courses there. So let's get to him. Nico, who? Come in, sir.
I'm Nick Ahern this week, Mark, not okay. Nick Ohu. I've got my regulation handicap that I'm playing to.
So have you played Tara Eady yet, or have you played the other two golf courses around Tara Eady?
Have not played Tara Eady yet. We've been to the club, had dinner with our friends that invited us this week. My wife had played there today in the member guest, and I've got it later on this week.
What'd she say?
She said it was unbelievable. Oh, unbelievable.
She'd know.
Just
too.
Stunning views. And the weather today was actually no wind, a little bit of drizzle. So it was quite friendly, but you know, if it blows out here, we're going to have hands full, that's for sure.
All right. So Alana's playing Tara Eady. What have you been doing the last couple of days?
Well, I've just been, playing TRI, which is the new courses about 15 minutes away. I played the South a couple of days ago, I played the North course a couple of days ago, which is the new Tom Doak course there, which opened about 6 months ago. And then I played the South today. So
who did that one?
Core Crenshaw.
Well, tell us about them, because what we see on Instagram. I mean, I just can't get over it. I am so desperate to get over and be in your shoes just to see what it's all about, because there are some golf courses that just light up on Instagram type sites. And there are other golf courses that light up on telly, like Peninsula Kingswood and Royal Melbourne and Kingston Heath. They just look fantastic on the TV. Victoria. But some just look so good on those drone flyovers. And Tara Eady and the other two golf courses you play, they're right up on top of that list.
Yeah, they certainly are. I took some photos of the North course. I actually played it yesterday, didn't I? That's right. I mean, it feels like a couple of days ago, but it was actually yesterday. And I posted some shots, and they just don't do it justice. That's the thing. You take these photos, and it doesn't almost do it as much justice, but the photos come up really good. So it shows you how spectacular it really is. And the North, they say, is harder than the South, and I agree with them. I played the South today, but the canvas that they have this golf course on for the South, which Core Crenshaw have designed, it's some of the best land you could ever hope to build a golf course on. And for me, someone said, "Oh, which do you prefer?" I said, "Well, for enjoyment wise and just looking at the golf course, it's definitely the south. But the north is also a great course as well. So there's some funky greens out there, that's for sure."
So for people who don't know what we're talking about, Tara Eady, it's a billionaire course, and I think it's a new category of golf course that we have in the world these days, because billionaires are just building their own thing. And you know, we spoke to Michael Cocking; he's got a billionaire course, two courses going on in Georgia. But this was one of the original style billionaire golf courses. Now, it was my understanding that the other two golf courses were at the top and tail of Tara Eady. Is that right, or are they completely different blocks of land?
Down the road, yeah, they're completely different. Well, Tara Eady is a little further north, and then you got to drive about 15-20 minutes further south, and then you come to the north course, and then obviously the south course there as well. But there, it also, I mean, it has this thing called the playground at TRI, which is a 2-acre, I think it is, putting green. It is one of the biggest putting greens I've ever been on. I've been on the Himalayas at St Andrews in Scotland, and I think this is bigger. It could be the biggest putting green in the world. It is so much fun. But what they do there at TRI is they open one of the courses for the public one day, and the other course plays as the member course, and then they just alternate it day to day. The facilities, the service, the practice range, everything is just unbelievable.
So there is a connection to Tara Eady, but it's not quite the same, and I love what they've done. You know, you can come down and play this course one day, then other course the next day, and then looks after the members. But at Tara Eady, I was always told, and you might have to ask the question and answer this next week, if you wanted to go and play Tara Eady and you're an international guest, their rules are you can play it once. You can come in, pay your money, you're allowed to play it once, and then that's it.
Really?
Sayonara, you can't come back. Now, I don't know whether you know that's true or not, Nick, but that's some homework for you if you don't know.
That's what I've heard as well, and I will ask the question for you, Mark, just to find out. But I think if you get invited by a member, you can probably come as many times as you want, I'm assuming. So I don't know. We'll find out. I hope to be invited back, that's for sure.
And you've got to find out how much money as well. How much New Zealand dollars, or if they've probably taken it in US dollars because the US billionaire. But you better find out for that one-time only visit to Tara Eady and find out how many groups we can bring, because I wouldn't mind taking a couple extras. And we'll work it out. But it does sound fantastic. And it's all on the same coastline, all these golf courses, the three golf courses, they're on the same coastline, but
just
separated by a little bit, by the sounds of it.
It's stunning. It really is stunning. I was, you know, everyone had told me about it coming here, and it's blown me away so far, and I haven't played Tara Eady yet, so I can only imagine how good that's going to be.
So there's Parkland Golf, if you look at American golf courses, that's Parkland Golf. You've got Lynx Golf, which we understand is where all the Opens are played on. Then you've got Dunes Golf as well, which I think is another category. You've got Seaside Golf. We'll throw that one in there, kind of, Flinders Golf Club and Pebble Beach and Cypress Point. What category of golf do you put Tara Eady and TRI in?
Oh, I'd go the Lynx for sure. I think it's more the Lynx Seaside. I mean, that's Lynx Seaside is almost the same thing, really. But there are some dunes around as well, which is what Tara Eady and TRI, I think, were built around, although it's built originally in a pine tree plantation. So that's where they carved it out of. But it's right on the water, and it's just, as I say, stunning. And the more games of golf we can play here, the better, that's for sure.
Right. Well, can you post it? Are you allowed to take photos? Is it got an Augusta rule? Can you live post some photos while you're playing Tara Eady tomorrow for me?
I will. Just for you, Mark. I'll send them through.
Nick, so we should also point out that this podcast, as with last week, is a day late. Yeah. And it's a day late because when we would normally record the podcast, you were on course at TRI, right. So we couldn't obviously interrupt you, which is totally
selfishly
fine.
On course.
Correct.
Selfishly on course. So we are a day late. We should mention that. But tell us how it works. So you haven't been on Tara Eady yet, but you're about to go on tomorrow. What do the next few days look like for you?
Well, tomorrow I'm going to go out and support my wife and her partner, Anne, in the women's member guests. So we'll just wander around, have a bit of a look, and then the following day I get a practice round with my partner, and then the next 2 days we do our the men's member guest. So it's going to be quite an interesting field, I'd say.
So Nick, you and I know all about the member guest, and if you play in America, the member guest is pretty much the biggest weekend for every country club in America. Now, I want to ask you, and I want to ask our people listening as well, is there room for member guest style weekends at our private golf clubs? And are there, in fact, member guests already happening out there? Because, you know, they have the big dinners, you know, everyone's wife is involved. They have the big dinner dance the night before. There are Calcuttas. There are all kinds of things that happen. You get seated on the last day. And it is, it's the most prestigious part of every country club in America. Can you see that sort of style weekend working in Australia, Nick?
I would love to see it happen. The issue is the fields tend to be a little smaller because they have to be because you're inviting the guests. So which members do you choose? That's going to be the big issue. I think you might have to run perhaps a competition throughout the year to say, hey, these members make it through, because there are different flights as well. So there are different categories of handicaps and things like that. So I could see it happening, but you need to do a bit of work around the edges to figure out how you're going to do it.
Anyway, that'll do for New Zealand, and we look forward to the next week's podcast and your Instagram feed or Twitter feed or whatever feed you're going to put it out there. We'll just follow us at
TalkBreed to me.
We'll get it out there. But just as we clean it up, I have had a quick look just on some of the early pictures of Commonwealth, because Commonwealth had the Tom Doak treatment pretty much on every hole, and some of the pictures look fantastic. Now, I'll endeavour to get out to Commonwealth this week because, it's a golf club with great history. It's in the middle of the Melbourne Sandbelt. It's probably been the poorer cousin for a long time of the Melbourne Sandbelt, but the early pictures that I've seen of Commonwealth look stunning. Again, they're Instagram pictures, but I better get there live and give a full report next week, because Tom Doak, you know, a lot of people call him the Tiger Woods of golf course architecture around the world. He loves the Melbourne Sandbelt. He's definitely put the Metropolitan Greens in, which means, you know, the mower, it's the same length. It's just greens right up to the edge of the bunkers, the Sandbelt bunkers. So that's going to be a feature of Commonwealth that I can't remember that being a feature too often. But, you know, it's a golf club that's hosted Australian Opens. It's hosted big amateur events for a long time, Australian Amateurs. I think Wayne Smith from Western Australia won his Australian Amateur at Commonwealth Golf Club many moons ago. I remember watching that one on ABC TV. So Instagrams and also Twitter is so big these days in golf. And I saw somebody put down the footage of somebody's ball moving in the rough, Nick. Now, we believe it was Wyndham Clark, his golf ball in the long rough. I didn't play a lot of golf in that long rough style. So it's just, you know, your standard American grass. What do they call that sort of grass? Rye grass? It's the same grass that they have at Augusta.
Yeah.
But Augusta's rough is only, you know, what, probably an inch and a half long. And at Arnold Palmer's golf course, it's quite long. It's almost US Open style grass. So what's the right etiquette in professional golf when you're in that situation? Because it doesn't matter what you do, the ball's going to sink a little bit.
Well, it's all a matter of does the ball change position? And what we saw, I think I saw the same thing on this, I think it was Saturday's round, where he really put his sand on, or his wedge, behind the ball. It was on the final hole at Bay Hill there on 18. He was in the rough, and he really put it down forcefully, and to me, it looks as though the ball actually did change position when I looked at it, and he did it, banged it down a couple of times, and he had a bit of this issue at the US Open last year as well when he won, when he did something similar, but they said, no, it didn't move. In this case, again, they've said the ball didn't move, but I've looked at it a couple of times. For me, it looks as though it's moved. I mean, John Rahm.
Yeah, well, it sank, didn't it?
Yeah, well, it sank and it moved forward, I think. So, you know, the thing about this grass is it's very spongy. It can lay different ways. And yes, the ball can look as though it's moving around, but typically it sits in the same spot. But in this instance, I think he should have been penalised, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm the other way.
But they let it go. The rules official said, no, that's fine. But to me, it looked as though it moved. Do you think it stayed still?
Well, no, I don't think it did stay still. I think it moved, but I think it's one of those situations in golf where you got to kind of put the ball club behind the ball at some point. Now, I don't think – I think where it moved to, I think he ended up having a worse lie. And in my mind – so this is where it's funny. We need the rules people to come out and explain this better. But in my mind, you've got to be able to put the club behind the ball when it's in grass. I just think you can't just start from way up, and I don't think it doesn't sit well with me.
Okay,
but I don't feel like he was. I don't feel like he made the lie better, and that's what the rule is kind of designed for, in my view. Now, I can go either way, but I thought it would have been if you got penalised, I would have said okay, that clears everything up for me. In my mind, I understand that you can't do that. But because he didn't get penalised, and I know the rules officials have had a good look at it, then that's where I scratch my head and I go, okay,
yeah,
the ball didn't feel like it rolled one way or the other. I just felt like it sank.
Yeah, so it has moved.
But when the ball sinks like that, the view that we have with the camera is very different from the view that you have as a player when you're doing that. So he might have seen the ball sink. It might have looked like a millimetre to him. And in that situation, I think a millimetre is okay, but it's when the ball moves off its spot that I think it's very...
As a player, I've unintentionally moved my ball before, and it's only a half a millimetre, a millimetre. You do know when it moves. Honestly, you do. And when people say that, oh, no, I didn't realise, well, I think you do. And from what I saw, that one did look like it moved. I remember there was Hideki at Riviera, who just won recently. Was it last week or the week before, where he was on the back of the 17th. He had a chip shot. And again, they zoomed in on his club because someone said, oh, that ball moved. Now, that one, actually, the ball didn't. It just sort of oscillated. It went back, it rocked back and forth, stayed in the same spot.
That's right.
Whereas Clark's, I think there's a big difference. And the same thing happened to Rahm at the Memorial a couple of years ago when he was leading, and he ended up chipping in for birdie on the 70th hole, the 16th hole or something like that. And they assessed him at a penalty, and he ended up making a bogey. And they zoomed in on that one, and you could see the ball just fractionally move, and sure enough, there you go.
When you say oscillate, that's a really good point, because the ball is allowed to wobble as long as it goes back.
Yes.
And I reckon when Wyndham Clark put the club behind the ball, I felt like it did oscillate. It went up and down, and then in the end it just went down.
Mm.
And that all happened when his club was behind the ball.
I think it might have moved forward a little.
Yeah, okay. I can't remember it moving forward. I'll have to have another look.
Well, the way he went about it was he really put that club head behind the ball forcefully, vigorously. If you're going to do it gently, not like the way he did it anyway. So it's almost giving the players free rein to go in and go, hey, I can just wang my club behind the ball here, and if it moves, well, I'm sure I'll be fine.
Well, this is why, because I played in that style grass three or four times in my entire life. You know, maybe half a dozen if I go all the way back to college, you know, some of the golf tournaments that we might have played in winter. But I rarely played with rough like that, with just ryegrass rough. Now, what do they call it? Kentucky bluegrass, which is just cooch rough. the ball doesn't really do that. I mean, you get there quite often and the ball's already sunk down.
Yeah.
But in the ryegrass, because ryegrass is a little bit sticky, it can sometimes hold the ball up like we saw. So if we were going to do the talk birdie to me etiquette of that situation in rye grass, where do you put the club? Because you've got to put the club behind the ball at some stage. I think that's, to me, that's fair in golf.
Yeah.
That you should be allowed to put the club behind the ball. Now, whether it's 2 inches behind the ball or 6 inches behind the ball, I don't know, but I feel like you should be able to know where the bottom of the ground is. But I'm asking you.
Yeah, I think when you get in those awkward lies and situations, yes, you should be allowed to put it behind the ball, but you've got to do it carefully, and I don't think you should do it the way he did it. Now, every now and then you might get if you're in a fairway bunker, well, hey, you can't put your club head on the ground behind it there. So it's not unusual for players to hover the club above the ball. And they should have a good sense once you get to the ball that, okay, if I put my club behind this, is this going to move? It's like having it in pine needles or pine straw or whatever you want to call it. Sometimes you can't ground your club there because you know it's probably going to move. So that's a similar situation there. So you just have to take it on a case-by-case basis. And at the end of the day, if it moves, it is what it is. But to be honest, it didn't affect the result mainly because, hey, Scotty Scheffler, he's found his putter again, right?
Yeah, well, look, last time I saw it, I watched a bit of it. last time I saw him, I think it was in the third round, I watched him play there, and I think he was number 14 in putting for the week, which is enormous, remembering that last year he was we had the scoring average of the year, and he was plus 150 in the putting averages. So we're always waiting for the good week to come, and apparently 24 putts on Sunday. Now, 24 putts fixes everything.
Yeah.
But I imagine that would have been close to number one in the fourth round.
Yeah, so he was number one strokes gained putting for Sunday. He ended up being number five for the week. Mm. I think tee to green, off the tee, he was number one. He was number one in scrambling around the green, strokes gained as well. And it's a scary thought if he gets the putter going that basically everyone thinks they're going to be playing for second because he's that good from tee to green. And on the weekend, he made every putt inside 15 feet, didn't miss inside 15 feet. So look out, everyone. And the big change was he started using a mallet putter. So something very different for him, which I think Rory McIlroy sort of suggested a couple of weeks ago as well. So, you know, and the biggest thing for him, and from what I heard from his interviews, was he stopped trying to be perfect on the greens. He's just reacting a bit more. He's not taking as much time over it. And all of a sudden, hey, you roll in a few, the confidence goes up. And tell you what, the Players' Championship is coming up this week. Everyone's going to be keeping a very close eye on him.
Yeah, I saw where he took the line off the ball to where he's trying to be more, they call it athletic. Taking the line off the ball, which I get that. A lot of people would have heard that and go, what the hell are you talking about? You take a line off the ball and you become more athletic. Well, it's because you're using your senses a hell of a lot more, you know, like you did as a kid. And trusting, you're forced to trust your senses. And in golf, that's athletic. Now, did you ever, I mean, you always had with the long putter, did you ever use kind of a square-shaped putter, like the spider that he was using? I've used a spider before.
I've used it was more a block than anything, but no, I've never used that mallet style that he had with the long putter. They never had those sorts of options when I was playing, but I'm not a real mallet guy myself, but I love the fact he's taking the line off the ball. I mean, I think that should be banned actually on tour.
Me too.
I don't think players should be allowed to use the line because it's an alignment aid, and it's a part of the game. It's a part of the skill of it. You know, you should know where you're aiming. Now, for the rest of golfers that play out there at club level, fine. You know, use a line on the ball. That's why we could bifurcate probably three or four of the rules, I think, for pros and the amateurs as well. But it was just great to see him roll a few in as you said, more athleticism for him on the greens is a huge thing. His shoulders still look a little funky for me. There's something going on there where they're a bit open or closed. And
they're open.
I'm not quite sure. I didn't get a real close look at it. And every now and then, the stroke didn't look that great going back, but through the ball he was actually much more positive and a bit more rhythm to it as well, and I really like that.
Yeah, and look, the good news I think that will happen is once he starts seeing the ball go into the hole again more often, and let's just assume that that's going to happen now with a little extra confidence, then it's amazing what confidence does to the way that you putt. And clearly there's been anxiety. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety, and there has been just in his look. And I think that shoulder thing that you see, and certainly what I see, is that the head kind of moves in a funny way, certainly not like it used to. And that's just anxiety. That's just the one thing. And, you know, it's been funny. I've been watching, what's the Netflix show called again?
Full Swing.
Full Swing. Full Swing 2's been on. Yeah, I guess we've got to talk about that at some stage as well. But
I haven't seen it yet.
Haven't you? Yeah, well, they've got a lot of stuff from Wyndham Clark. And Wyndham Clark, basically, he's gone to a sports psychologist. And the sports psychologist, they're talking about getting the anxiety out of your birdie putts. And he says his par putts, he's got no anxiety. But for whatever reason, he has anxiety in his birdie putts. And I think that's common. Yeah, I think it's common for a lot of people who play the game. There seems to be more importance of birdie putts, and particularly people who hit it close all the time, like Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler. You know, if they start missing some of these birdie putts that they feel like they should be making, then the anxiety builds. But Wyndham Clark, a lot of what his sports psychologist was telling him was just to clear the anxiety as best he could from those putts. And it is amazing when you think of it before you do these things. It's reasonably easy to do.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think, you know, to putt well on those greens as well at Bay Hill, I mean, I know it's my turn for the top five this week, and I was actually thinking about a top five most overrated golf courses on the PGA Tour, and I know Bay Hill is one of them because it's it's not a great golf course, I can tell you.
You've said this a couple of times.
It looks good on TV.
I've told people that you don't rate this golf course because I watch it and I go, wow, I want to go and play Bay Hill. But I know you've told me a number of times that it's not worth going to play.
My coach came over one year and he said I wanted to play Bay. I said, Neil, you don't want to do that. And anyway, we ended up going out there and playing. He walked off and he said, well, that's the biggest disappointment of my golfing life right there.
Okay, so now listen, anyway. Put that in your back pocket. Put that in your holster.
I will.
Because in a couple of weeks, I want to hear your top five golf courses that look good on the US Tour but aren't that good.
I didn't know if we'd done that top five before. But anyway, it's also... Bay Hill's also the scene of my only DQ on tour. I think I probably told you that one as well.
There you go, Dan. There was a little extra that we didn't know about. He's just giving them a good clip over the head.
Yeah, a little extra for you there. But I blame John Daly for that DQ, though. So anyway.
hang on. What did John Daly do in the DQ? How is this involved?
Well, they had a rule back on in the tour back in the day where if you... were meant to play the pro-am, but you didn't show up or you didn't want to play it, well, then they could disqualify you from the golf tournament. And I lived 5 minutes from Bay Hill because I lived at Isleworth, which was just around the corner. And I was actually an alternate for the afternoon pro-am. I think I was second alternate.
Right.
But the thing was, in the physio truck, they had a sheet up there saying pro-am, alternates, blah, 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 yep, in the afternoon. But in the locker room, apparently, it said I was in the morning, and I didn't know that. But anyway, John Daly was meant to play the morning pro-am, obviously went on a bit of a bender. He didn't show up, and so they went to the first alternate, which was Ruigi Imada.
Yeah,
and Ruigi thought he was playing in the afternoon. He thought he was first alternate in the afternoon like myself. He wasn't there, so he gets DQ'd. I was second alternate. I wasn't there because I thought I was off in the afternoon. I get DQ'd as well. And I said to the tour, I said, look, why didn't you just call me? I live down the road 5 minutes. And they said, no, well, it's your responsibility to be on the tee if you are meant to be there. I said, well, I was waiting for the afternoon. And they changed the rule because of that instance there. They started contacting people saying, okay, you're going to be here, you know, at this time, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not my favourite place in the world, old Bay Hill, as you can tell.
Do they call it the Nick O'Hearn rule these days?
They should have, yeah.
They should.
Absolutely.
So hang on, let me get this straight. So John Daly got disqualified. Who's the middle guy?
Yep. Ruigi Imada. Remember him, the Japanese golfer?
He got disqualified.
And I got disqualified as well.
One, two, three. The three of you got disqualified.
There was no third alternate. So they just had to get someone else who was just hanging around practicing. Yeah.
Hang on, you got disqualified from the Pro-Am or you got disqualified from the Arnold Palmer Invitational?
I was in the golf tournament.
Yeah.
I was an alternate for the Pro-Am.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I didn't show up for the Pro-Am, they disqualified me for the whole golf tournament.
Unbelievable.
Wow. How's that for a rule?
Unbelievable. That's a ridiculous rule, especially when you live 5 minutes away.
I know.
They could have called you. You could have just been 5 minutes late on the tee and you get the...
That's what I told them.
Anyway.
Hey, Nick, at that time when you were disqualified for the tournament, were you in reasonable form at that point in time? I imagine that you would have been.
I was doing okay. I wasn't top 50 in the world at the time. Otherwise, I would have been in the Pro-Am rather than being an alternate. But I was, you know, exempt on tour. I was playing some pretty good golf and I always enjoyed playing it because I could sleep in my own bed that week. And, to not play, it wasn't much fun. And, anyway, one of those things that happens.
You're a tough golf course player.
I love those hard golf courses, but that one I just never really enjoyed. So, anyway.
Hey, speaking of Bay Hill, do you see Rory McIlroy's comments at Bay Hill about Liv, where he said, not for me, categorically, not for him?
Yeah, and I'm glad he came out and said that because the rumours were swirling that he was contemplating going over there, but that would have been it for the PGA Tour, but that would have been the biggest body blow of all if he moseyed over. There's a fair bit happening. I mean... who was it? Who's the other left-hander who's the captain of the President's Cup team? I mean, during the week he said that no Liv players will be playing in the international team. So I imagine that goes the same for the American team as well. And it kind of makes sense because the President's Cup is a PGA Tour event. So why would you give a leg up to anyone from a live tour who are trying to pinch player after player after player. So I'm kind of on board with it as far as the President's Cup. Now, the Ryder Cup, I think that's probably a free-for-all. I think you'll see all the Americans, as many as possible, playing in that one.
Well, so the difference, the captain you referenced was Mike Weir, because it's been played in Canada, so they got the Canadian captain, obviously. But to play the President's Cup, because as you said, it's a PGA Tour-owned event, you have to be eligible to play the PGA Tour. So none of the Americans, none of the internationals, they're not going to be playing on the team. The Ryder Cup, that's owned by a different entity. Now,
correct.
I have a feeling the PGA Tour Enterprises, this new entity, wants to buy the Ryder Cup. So if they actually buy the Ryder Cup, well, then they probably won't have any Americans or Europeans playing in the Ryder Cup as well. So we're going to have to see, live golfers, that is. So we're going to have to see how that all pans out.
Okay, so is that going to be enough to keep the best players playing the PGA Tour? That you know, the carrot of playing a Ryder Cup, the carrot of playing for America in the President's Cup, and same for the internationals and same for the European players. I mean, if it gets to a point where if you go across to live there, you won't get a Guernsey at the Ryder Cup and you won't be playing the President's Cup, I think that's it's not a full house for the PGA Tour, but it's certainly a couple pair.
Yeah, but as we've seen, money rules everything, and I don't think that'll stop people from going that way. So, yeah.
Who'd be the next biggest target for Liv to go across, just off the top of your head?
Oh, top of my head, Hovland.
Yep.
I would think.
Hovland and Hideki.
Well, Hideki, I mean, they offered him, what did they offer him, about $400 or $500 million a year ago or something like that, and he didn't go, so... I'm not sure he'll be going. But hey, if they double that, well, who knows?
Yeah. And no chance JT, no chance Scotty Scheffler. I can't see those boys going. No chance Spieth.
No.
Who else is a poster boy over there? Jason Day, I could see if his form went south, I could see him making a phone call to the Shark and saying, "Hey, any cash left over and there for me?" I could see that happening.
Yeah, and you had Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele and those guys. You never know with those two. Who knows? They could go as a package deal. I think we've spoken about that before.
Well, Dan and I, we're right here at Golf Headquarters here in Australia. Nick O'Hearn over at Tara Eady. What do you get at the halfway house at Tara Eady? What sort of food do you have over there?
Well, funny you should say that. Today at TRI when I played, we had the clubhouse, as in not the club sandwich, but it was the club wrap. You know how I like my wraps, and it was sensational.
All right,
and you know, and my playing partner Mark, he said we got to order the waffle fries, so we had those as well. It was beautiful.
Okay, well you're over there at TRI. You can have the club wrap, and you can have the club waffles, and Dan and I will have a party pie each and a Gatorade.
And Nick will have a glass of wine, no, from Marlboro or something like
course.
That.
Of course he will. We'll see you on the 10th.
Cheers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Now, if you haven't checked out the Golf Clearance Outlet, then you, I can guarantee you this, are missing out. And if you have, well, you know what we're talking about. Great time to drop in, because with all the new equipment released in January, good old Sam at the Golf Clearance Outlet is licking his lips, because the stores are chock full of 2023 branded clearance product. And you know, that was a hell of a year for golf equipment, Nick.
You're spot on there, Mark. There's heaps of gear for righties, of course, but as you know, I am a lefty, so there's a heap of gear for lefties as well, and plenty for both men and women. And if you're after a great Prezi idea, you can get gift cards in-store or online.
So if you're looking for great golf gear and great prices, the Golf Clearance Outlet needs to be in your plans to go and check it out. See the team in-store at Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, or online, golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. It's that simple, Nick.
Can't wait.
Hang on, Nick. I thought you were righty putting now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Mark, you are all across Watch My Numbers. You are all over this like a rash. It does look pretty impressive.
Look, one of the things I missed from my career that Nick enjoyed was having stats available. I never got it, except, of course, for Sand Saves, where I was number one. But I never got the look at how close I was hitting the five irons, where my miss was with my driver. I never got it. And it was always just in my head. I didn't actually know the facts. And with Watch My Numbers, it's no longer a feel thing. It is a factual guide to what you are doing in the game. And Nick, you knew how powerful that was playing in the US Tour.
Yeah, we had what was called ShotLink over there, but I wish I'd have had this sort of an app for myself, because weirdly, I was very much a feel player and I kind of stayed away from the statistics. But looking back, if I'd have had this, who knows?
So it's got the pro level, it's got the elite level, it's got the low handicapper, the high handicapper. It covers everybody, and your stats will be assessed at your level, and you'll be pushed into the right direction because of the Watch My Numbers app. It's a beauty, folks, and I highly, highly recommend it.
I was on it the other day, and subscribers get extra bonus content, including videos from you, Mark, doing some stuff as well.
Why are you laughing, Ben? Why are you laughing?
Hey, by the way, do you do it during or the round or after?
Either way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can do it right there and then, or you finish your round and you put your own data in. So
nice.
You might have had a 150-metre 7-iron on the third hole at Metropolitan Golf Club. Put where you hit it from, you mark where it went to, and then you've got the real-time data at your fingertips anytime you want from that point forward.
Watch My Numbers helps you master your game and play smarter by using data.
If you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to subscribe and never miss an episode. And maybe share it with a friend. Now back to Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
Jeez, this 10th hole is looking very difficult, straight into a 7-club wind. It is very, very strong. But if you go to the golf clearance outlet, no matter where you go in Australia, make sure you ask the staff which ball suits windy conditions, because there are different winds all over the place. And the golf clearance outlet, they have all the big brands. They have the best brands in the business, all the big balls, all the big golf clubs. You name it, they have got it. Make sure you go and visit and say hello to Sam Colosimo for us, because he's a big part of the show. And we're not that far away from hearing the trumpet play when the Ping Global results. That's when Nico Hu starts moonwalking over there at Tara Edie. He gets that excited.
Yeah,
You've never seen Nico Hearn moonwalk. We'll have to post that vision at some stage as well.
You never will.
Do you know, we had that caller on last week who asked a question about the Ping driver and the OEM shaft all getting an upgrade.
Yeah, that's good.
I think his name was Brian. And he's gone and got it.
What do you get?
No, he's got the standard one, which is what Matt Austin from Ping recommended for him, given he's an 18 handicapper.
Yeah.
And he's emailed me and saying, I've got it. I'm going to give it a bash for, you know, 2 or 3, 4 weeks, yeah. and I'm going to call you back and tell you how it went.
Love it.
So we'll get him on. That'll be great. That'll be really good to hear how he's going with his new Ping G430 10K Max driver.
Now, just a little bit of homework I had to clean up. Christopher Ventura.
Oh, yes.
So I had to try and find out whether he was any relation to Ken Ventura. I've made phone calls. I've done everything possible. Wikipedia wasn't enough. This kid's from Norway. He's not related to Ken Ventura. He's also, I did a little extra, he's not related to Jesse the Body Ventura. He is just a normal kid. He's just a normal kid from Norway who's killing it on the Korn Ferry Tour. Did you have homework as well, Nick?
Was it the top five from last week?
Yes, it was.
It was the top five. All right, yep. So we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my masterclass, I'm going to do it on how to get rid of your anxiety when you putt. It's a big one. I said it was easy, and I'll show you how easy it is a little bit later in the program.
How's the view looking over there in New Zealand, Nick? It's still beautiful?
Oh, it's gorgeous. We got a bit of rain out on the course today, but you know what? You could just put up with that when it's just pure. No wind today was awesome.
Top five. It's time for this week's Top five.
All right. So this week's top five is coming.
Have you been drinking?
No. Well, I had one beer at lunch. Yeah, there you go. All right. This week's top five is from Chris Payne. Sent in a message last week talking about players that play both ways, left and right-handed, or who has the best swings if you're a right-handed golfer and they can play left. Now, I know, Mark, I know you wanted me to put myself on this list, and I'm going to refrain from doing it. Okay, I'm going to refrain because I did find a few others that are very good. Plus, I don't have my handicap yet, and there's better golfers out there. But number five is a bit of a different one, and the only reason I say this is because I haven't never seen him swing left-handed, but he used to putt left-handed. He actually used to putt both ways, and that's Nota Begay.
Right,
remember him?
Yeah, absolutely.
He had the old bullseye Kushnet style putter, and if he had a left to right putt, he'd putt left handed, and if he had a right to left putt, he'd putt right handed. Now, I don't know what he did on the straight putts, though. That's the only thing I'm a little confused by.
I played with a bloke from Western Australia years ago. His name was Brad King. He beat me in the West Australian Open, and he used to do exactly the same thing. He had the right to left as right handed, the left to right as left handed, and the straight ones were left handed as well.
Yeah, he was a flusher kingy. I do remember him from my junior days. He was a few years older than me. Never saw him swing it left-handed, though. But anyway, Nota Begay, number five. Number four, our own Richard Green. I've seen him hit balls right-handed, and he can swing it very nicely. I don't know if he plays any good, but his right-handed swing is excellent. So, Greeny, he's my number four. Number three, there was a video going around of this guy a while ago, Vijay Singh. I don't know if you've ever seen him swing left-handed, but it's
unbelievable,
rather pure. He's very, very talented, that fella.
It looks better than that loose-looking, big-turning thing that he's got going right-handed at the moment, actually.
You're probably right. Well, when you hit 1,000 balls a day, you may as well turn over and hit probably 100 or so left-handed as well, right? So
just for fun. Yeah.
Just for fun. My number two, and this is going to be controversial for you, Mark, but Cam Davis.
No.
Cam Davis is at number two.
How?
There's that video going around where he has the 5-iron, hits it right, and then he pulls up the 5-iron left-hand and hits it left, and it's a mirror image. It is very impressive, very, very impressive.
Well, who's your number one?
But the reason for my number one is Mac O'Grady, very much a quirky sort of pro from yesteryear back in the 80s. He actually was a scratch handicap golfer left-handed, but he was a professional right-handed. He won a couple of times on the PGA Tour right-handed. Now, here's a fun little thing that I found out about him. They used to have a tournament on the PGA Tour called the Chrysler Teams Championship, I think, and it was like a...
I remember that.
It was a best ball. So he had two pros, you know, best ball, and he entered it one year. He wanted to play one ball left-handed and one ball right-handed.
Correct.
So he wanted to be himself as a team event, but they wouldn't let him do it. So he was quite a character.
They should have let him do it. They should have let him do that. That would have been huge.
It would have been fantastic.
I remember it. I remember it as a you know, it was like a wow. He really wanted to do that. I couldn't get over it. I mean, anyway, he never done it.
He also wanted to play events with a persimmon woods as well. When everyone else was using the bigger headed steel drivers and all that, he'd come out with the persimmons and use those just because he thought that was the way to play.
I remember he came out and he played a Heineken Classic at Royal Melbourne, and they went and had a look at him because they heard that, you know, he was a nutty professor kind of guy, and, you know, what was that crazy golf book, The Golf Machine? He was he didn't worship the golf machine, but that was his book, the book that not many people understood, and he stood there at Royal Melbourne, and look, I'm guessing it was the 17th of the West, which is about the 11th hole on the composite, on the old layout. Anyway, he stood at the corner there, and he hit a lob wedge on the green, then he hit a sand iron on the green, then he just went through the whole bag, and he hit every from the same spot, and he knocked them all on the green back at Royal Melbourne. So I remember him doing that on the telly. It was just in the news. They interviewed him. He said, watch this, and just went through every iron, and from, you know, it was 160 or 170 metres, and he knocked every single iron that he had in his bag on the green. Ridiculous.
Yeah, amazing skill set that he had for sure, but he was a very, very different fellow, I'll say that.
He was a nutcase.
First of all, from Edgar. Hey, guys, love the pod. Would love your thoughts on the hybrid chip. I've recently been using it as I hit my chip shots fat. I find I have control and the ball runs right onto the green, better than the Texas wedge. However, I feel like this shot is frowned upon. What are your thoughts? Is it ethical? And has anyone ever used it on the tour?
Definitely ethical.
Oh, the hybrid chip shot? Absolutely. No, definitely go for it. Yeah. The best I ever saw at it was Tim Clark. Mainly because he really struggled to chip. his arms, his arms were, or his elbows were a bit I don't know, out of sorts. And the way he used to set up to the ball, his elbows almost touched, which is why he used a long putter as well. And when they banned the long putter or the anchoring, he started to really struggle because he wasn't able to use the short putter very effectively. But around the greens, this also made it difficult for him to hit regular chip shots, just the way his elbows were built, I guess you could say. So he either hit a real flop shot style thing with a sand wedge, or he got the hybrid out and used it from around the green and used it to great effect. And while we're on the subject of chipping, Mark, by the way, my partner this week playing with Mark Robertson, he is loving your tip that you did last week with the...
Which one?
Groove 2-5.
Oh, great. Yeah, it makes sense.
With the vertical vertical shaft, not leaning the hands forward. He's been using it a bit this week to great effect, so he says thank you.
All right, beauty.
Well, that's good news for Edgar, because he has said that using that has saved him about 2 or 3 shots a game. So it sounds like, Edgar, keep going.
Mm.
Con has written in. Hey, guys, I've been hearing you talk about LIV, and one of the concerns being that there's no cuts. Wasn't the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am a signature event with no cuts? Therefore, why did Wyndham Clark get 71.77 points for the 54-hole tournament? That was the one that was cut short due to weather.
Yeah. Well, look, that they do have weather provisions in their guidelines. And it, you know, even though it was an event that had a specialty number, I think there are definitely cuts. I mean, there was a cut at Bay Hill. There was a cut at Pebble Beach. So these tournaments do have cuts, but there are provisions in the guidelines, Nick, that if they do get cut short, that they still get the world ranking points and they still get their money and they still get everything else.
Yeah, I think over the course of a season, if you average more than 80% of tournaments, you know, that have 4 rounds and things like that, then everyone just does it. But if it's a constant, like as we know with LIV Golf, well, then they're not going to get those points.
Hunter's made a comment on Rory's comments about not going to LIV. Hunter said, honestly, I don't care that he doesn't like LIV. He's free to do what he wants, just like the players in LIV are allowed to do. You should do what you feel is in the best interests of your family. That's what he's done, and that's what the LIV players are doing. Everything's okay.
Yeah. Everything's okay for everyone.
Yeah.
You can do whatever the hell you like.
Totally agree.
Still on LIV, Mark.
Yes.
You ready for this one?
Yeah. Why are you looking at me like that for?
Well, because I've read what Adam's written.
Okay.
Adam has written in, hey guys, I love the podcast, but downplaying and treating LIV with disdain needs to stop.
Right.
On your last podcast, Mark, you said something along the lines of, I didn't even know it was on, only that it wasn't at an inconvenient or unwatchable time. The tee-off was 7 p.m. Australian time. Pretty much the best time to watch it. You need to be better.
Ooh. Ooh. Jeez. Okay, well, I'll do my best to watch more LIV golf. There you go. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Adam's entitled to his view.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm glad he's enjoying LIV golf.
For sure.
Yeah, some people absolutely love it. Some people prefer it.
You know, I think there's definitely a place for it. There's a place for it in the game. Absolutely. I think you can, you know, slot it into whatever part of the schedule. If we all come together, who knows? But if you enjoy it, that's fantastic. And if it gets people on the golf course, brilliant.
Now, from Adam giving us a whack to Rob, this is a lovely email. You're going to love this one. Okay. We're at the National last week. Rob said, hey, guys, I'm a National member, and about 18 years ago, I got married at the National.
Wow.
The ceremony was on the tee of the old number 7.
Oh, okay, where I took you out.
Yeah, where we went to. The reception was in the top room, where we were.
You're kidding.
With about 45 people, we had a cover band called Dean and Carruthers play. It was the best wedding ever. Isn't that a great
event? Oh, I love that. Yeah,
good.
Golf clubs are a great place for a wedding. Oh, they really are. In fact, a lot of the clubhouses, all the new clubhouses, they factor in how many weddings they're going to have a year, and that's kind of helps pay off all these golf clubs and all their new clubhouses. So they are popular. They have a wedding at a golf club.
Imagine having a ceremony on the tee at the 7th on the old course.
It'd have to be a nice day. You wouldn't want a windy day out there.
Ooh, yeah, you want to do it in summer or spring or something like that. Jackson's written in, hey guys, enjoy the podcast. Would love to get your thoughts on how to aim where you want to hit the ball. What are your tips? I tend to find when I have to aim left or right, my body gets a little bit confused on how to set up, and I end up trying to swing left or right rather than set up to a position I want to aim towards.
Okay, so having issues with alignment, is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Just a technique for the best alignment.
Yeah, well, I mean, the greatest that ever played the game, or arguably, depending on who you talk to, Jack Nicklaus always used that intermediate target. I think that's a fabulous one to use for people who really struggle with their alignment, is to pick something out 3 or 4 or 5 6 feet in front of you on the line. That's where that old spot lining, you know, comes along, or shaft lining, whatever we used to call it, where they hold the shaft up, you know, behind the ball just to get a feel for the correct line that they want to choose. And then along that line, you pick out a target, might be a leaf, a divot, anything like that. Line the club face up to that and then just square or set your feet at a right angle to that as well. I find that is the best way for people who really struggle, because if you aim at something 4 or 5 feet in front of you, much easier than aiming 200 meters down the fairway, or, you know, trying to pick a tree limb out or something like that. So that's always the easiest way. And then when you're practicing on the range, it's so important to put a club down or an alignment stick down exactly where you want to aim, because after a while, your eyes will adjust to when you look up, oh, that's where I'm aiming. So do it when you practice, and then out on the course, it will become second nature.
That's right. You get a frame of reference when you are lining up square to something all the time. When you're actually looking down at the ball, then you look up. Quite often, if you're aiming incorrectly, you'll twist your neck a little bit further than normal.
Mm.
If you're aiming a little bit to the right, you'll twist your left neck to the left a little bit more. And it's a good giveaway. Well, exactly what you said then, that shaft down when you practiced gives you a frame of reference mentally, and it's a big help.
Got another message from Lachlan Wood, very good golfer. Lachlan's written in, said, "Hey guys, I'd love you to add the G4D Tour to your Ping Global results when events are on."
Yes.
Is this the Lachlan Wood who wins a couple of our events?
Mate, it's the Lachlan Wood who is an absolute gun.
Yeah.
Well, that's up your alley there, Nick.
Yeah, he certainly is a gun, Lachlan. He's a pro up at Hervey Bay, and he's been out playing on the G4D Tour, I think, over there in Europe. He had a runner-up there, I think, last month to Kip Poppet, who's you know, one of the best all-abilities players in the world. So, yes, we're going to do that. We're going to add that to the Ping Global results. Every time I see a G4D tournament on, let's do it. I think the next one might be in April sometime.
Well, Lockie, just send them through, mate.
Yes, that would help.
There might be a couple of results we miss. We don't want to miss them. So send them through if you could.
We will get to those Ping Global results in about a minute. Last bit of feedback here. This is from Peter Humphrey. He said, "Nick, I'm sure you won't remember me, but I used to work with Alana at a company called Intergraph. So I met you on a couple of work social occasions. I was also playing the public courses in Perth those days and used to see you whenever we came up to Marangaroo. Inevitably, you were hitting bunker shot after bunker shot, but you were always nice enough to say hi."
Oh.
Sounds like you're a decent bloke in those days.
Very surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Peter goes on to say, "I've started adopting one of your recommended putting PSRs with a couple of practice swings, standing behind the ball, looking down the line, then addressing the ball with the right hand on the club, and the 1-2-3 routine. Look at the hole, look at the ball, start the swing, and I'm finding it really helpful. Could it work for chips and pitches as well? I'd love your thoughts."
Definitely, yes. Firstly, Peter, by the way, I do remember the company that Alana used to work for, Intergraph, so fantastic. That she's got a good memory there. But with the putting, awesome to see you taking in all those little tips as well. It's obviously, you know, having a process to follow is the real key with the short game. Make sure that you really have something that your mind is focused on rather than the result, because usually with short game, the bad stuff happens when you're worried about a result. So if you can sort of shift your mind to focus on a count or looking at your target or something like that, that's all important. But that 1-2-3, definitely try it with the chipping. It's certainly helped a lot of people. 4 shots, not so much, because, you know, the 1-2-3 count needs to be smooth. And with full swings in that, well, it doesn't quite work. But chipping and putting where you want that nice rhythm, it'll definitely help. So give it a go. Okay, Ping Global results for this week. What a week it was. So many golf tournaments. The PGA Tour, they actually had two events on because they had a signature event on at Bay Hill, one of my favourite courses over there, as you can tell. Scotty Scheffler, what a week for him. A 5-shot win over Wyndham Clark, who apparently didn't move his golf ball in the rough. So well done to Scotty there.
That's
Shane
Lowry
had a good result too, third. He usually plays terribly at this event, but for some reason he played really well, and he actually afterwards said, "I have no idea how I did it." So well done to Shane, because he's a great character to see at the top of leaderboards. And the PGA Tour, they had a really good leaderboard going there for a while with all their big stars up the top. But unfortunately, Rory fell away on the last day for sure. But of the Aussies, Cam Davis was the best, tied for 18th, Jason Day 36th, and Minwoo Lee was 44th, and a bit of a tough cut to miss this one because there's not too many players, but Adam Scott did manage to miss it, so tough week for Adam. Also going on at the same time on the PGA Tour is the Puerto Rico Open, where Bryce Garnett won on the fourth playoff hole from Eric Barnes. Well done to Bryce of the Aussies. Aaron Baddeley tied for 23rd, and Harrison Endicott was 42nd. Live Golf, they were over there in Hong Kong. Well, he played this golf course. I think it's Fan Ling, that area there, the Royal Hong Kong Golf Club. Beautiful golf course, kind of a short course too, so you really had to work your ball around, and no surprises to see Abraham Ancer win in a playoff because he's got that style of game where he loves to work the ball.
Yeah.
But he defeated Paul Casey and Cam Smith, the Aussie, our own Cam Smith. Good to see him playing well because he hasn't played that well of late, old Cam, but almost.
What about the Rippers? Where'd the Rippers finish up? Did we have a decent week this week?
They were third.
Hey, finally. Well done, boys.
Yes, they were third, so they get a nice little check there. Yeah, now the Crushers won again, so that was well done. And the other, you know, good result for the Live Golf was Anthony Kim shot a very good final round, 5-under 65. So he still finished.
Did he really?
He finished 50th, so he wasn't dead last this time, but at least he showed some signs of life. So well done there to Anthony.
Good.
On the LPGA Tour, they were over there in China playing the Blue Bay LPGA Championship, and where Bailey Tardy, I tell you, I don't know if you saw any of this, Mark, but I watched some of the highlights, and she dominated the back nine with her iron play. She was like 7-under for the last 11 holes and went on to a 5-shot win, her first on the tour. So very, very impressive. Minji Lee was the best of the Aussies, tied for fourth. She was up there for quite a while, along with Lydia Ko.
She's swinging well, isn't she, Minji?
She is.
Minji's swinging the club very well, and I think it's majors season coming up pretty soon, so she'll be very happy where she's placed.
Yeah, it's hard to see her ever playing bad with that golf swing. And anyway, Gabby Ruffles tied for 15th there, so very well done. Now,
nice.
It was a bit of a weird one because the LPGA were playing in China and the Ladies European Tour, they were playing in Tampa, Florida. So I don't know how that works, the European Tour playing in the US. And anyway, but on the Ladies European Tour, they had the Aramco Team Series presented by PIF in Tampa, Florida, where Germany's Alexandra Fosterling had a 3-shot win over Charlie Hull. So congratulations to the German there on the win. On the DP World Tour, they're playing the Johnson Workwear Open in South Africa. We only had one Aussie there, Jason Scrivener, tied for 17th. So well done, Scriv. But Matteo Manassero, I don't know if you remember that name.
Yeah.
The Italian stallion, I'll call him that. He had the youngest win, the youngest win ever, 13 years ago now, at the age of 17. Remember, he was the youngest winner ever on the European Tour. But it had been 11 years since his last win. He's now 30 years old, but he's fifth on tour, and he was going to be a future superstar. So hopefully, well, he obviously is trending in the right direction, but it would be great to see him up there again because a really nice young man and one heck of a golfer, that's for sure.
He's another player who chased a bit of length, Nick. He actually was concerned about how he was placed in the driving distance stats. He felt like it was hurting him. He went and chased distance. He's given that chase away, and he's starting to play some decent golf again. So
it happens so often, doesn't it? Yeah, when they start chasing that distance. Yeah. Korn Ferry Tour over in the US, the Astara Chili Classic, where Taylor Dixon won in a playoff over Trey Winstead. A couple of Americans going at it there. Our best Aussie was Curtis Luck, who actually had the first round lead, but he sort of struggled over the next three, but he finished tied for 48th. The Champions Tour, the Colligard Classic, I think that's how you say it, Colligard Classic in Tucson, Arizona. Joe Durant, one of the nicest guys in the game of golf. He had a 2-shot win over New Zealand's Steve Orca. Since I am in New Zealand, I will mention Steve, who's still churning along, isn't he? It's unbelievable how well he's playing these days. But
well, he's the new human ATM. You were the inaugural human ATM. He's now taken up your spot.
Oh, there you go. But the best of the Aussies, and I tell you, this is a great story because he Monday qualified to get in, Greg Chalmers. Monday qualified to get in, and he finished tied for 7th. Now, given it's a top 10, that gets him into the following Champions Tour event. And will he do a Steve Alka? Will he go on a top 10 run and start a run that Steve did a few years ago? That'll be interesting to watch.
He's good on Twitter.
He's great.
Greg Chalmers. I mean, he shows you what he's working on. He shows you some new techniques. I saw one the other day where he was doing short swings, and his lead foot, he was pushing against the weight. Now, I don't know how that works, but that's something that he's been working on. I've been watching him try to get some more pace in his golf swing, some more speed, and he shares a lot of stuff, and it's fabulous to listen to, and he's always got a smile in his tweets, you know. He's enjoyed himself out there.
He's a great character. Some of the stuff he comes up with, if you don't follow him, you certainly should.
Yeah, you should.
On the Epson Tour over there, Florida's Natural Charity Classic. That's a mouthful, in Winter Haven, which is not far from where we used to live, actually. Colombian Valerie Plata won in a playoff over Anna Belak from Slovenia. But our own Cassie Porter, what a good result for her. Third in her first event over there on the Epson Tour. She was actually only two shots out of the playoff, and she started a final round double bogey-bogey and came back to shoot two or three under in the final round, maybe even four under. It was an amazing round of golf. So well done to Cassie. That's a great start to her campaign. More locally, we had the Riversdale Cup actually going on there in Melbourne. Blake Perkins from Queensland had a five-shot win on the men's side. Caitlin Pierce won by one from Hannah Reeves. And in the all abilities, Wayne Persky had a five-shot win over Cameron Pollard. So nice wins by all of those players. And, Mark, this isn't a result, but this week you're commentating the National, the final Challenger PGA Tour of Australasian event this week at the National. So can't wait to see that tournament, how it all unfolds, because those three DP World Tour cards are up for grabs. And you mentioned, we were chatting offline earlier, Kazuma Kobori already has one of those wrapped up.
Yeah, he's got the number one.
Yeah, you've got Brett Coletta at number two at the moment, Daniel Gale number three, Matty Griffin four, and Dave Micheluzzi at five, who already has his card, but he'd love to sew it up anyway. But Matty Griffin, he'll be trying to squeeze into that top three and take one of those cards. So it's a big week for a lot of our young Aussies.
Yeah, it certainly is. The golf course is looking a treat. It's myself and Stacey Peters and Ryan Lynch will be doing the heavy lifting in the commentary booth. So we're looking forward to that this weekend.
Well, I hope you miss me there anyway.
No, we won't miss you. There'll be more chicken sandwiches on Saturday for us. I'm actually going to hide a lunch this week, and I'm going to put it somewhere so I've got chicken sandwiches on both Saturday and Sunday.
Nick said the smoked salmon was what you want to have at the National.
That's true.
Oh, the smoked, no, that is true. Yeah. Now, if you've been watching the Netflix series, what's it called again then?
Full Swing 2.
Full Swing, thank you. Full Swing 2. Yeah, and if you've seen Wyndham Clark talk about what he's doing with his sports psychologist, he's trying to get rid of the anxiety when he putts. And he freely says that he doesn't feel the anxiety with par putting. He does with the birdie putting. I've been there before. But I quite often will talk about a nervous head or an anxious head when people putt, and that's when they look up quickly. You start looking up quickly because you're so anxious where this ball's going to go, then that affects the way your shoulders turn. I'm absolutely certain of it. If your head stays still, then your head actually helps slow those shoulders down, which helps the putter release when things start slowing down in the follow-through. You'll often see players just taking the deep breath before they putt. Now, it's one thing to take a deep breath, but the second thing and the most important thing is that when you are doing that, you've got to shed your anxiety. And I think it's as simple as thinking that. You've just got to shed it. You've just got to get over the putt. You've got to have a deep breath. You've got to push the anxiety to the side, and then you just worry about where that ball starts. Now, in professional golf, I don't know about you, Nick, but if I'd done my practice, I never worried about where the ball with distance. I never worried about it. I always felt like my distance control was automatic if I'd done my practice. So in my view, if you have done your practice and you take that deep breath and you just get rid of it, the anxiety, you just let it drain out the soles of your feet, then you worry about where the ball starts. That's it. That's all you have to worry about, because, like I said, if you've done your practice, the distance control is taken care of. So I'll put a video up. I'll explain what an anxious head looks like. I'll explain, because there's a couple sorts. Because there's the anxious head where you just flat look up, and there's an anxious head that you tried to keep your head still, but you're cheating and you're turning it sideways to see that ball start online. But I'll explain that shortly. But yeah, you've got to get rid of that anxiety in the putting, particularly if you know that you are anxious.
I really like that, Mark. And a couple of things you said there, the breathing is so important before you walk into the ball. Just a couple of deep breaths, exhale, relaxes you. Another little trick I used to do every now and then when I found I was getting a bit tense was also trying to relax my jaw, because when you clench your jaw, that's when you get tight and a bit sort of the head might go a little early as well. Yeah. So just think about that.
An absolute beauty. That is a beauty. Mm-hmm. Well, you've got Tara Eady tomorrow. You've played TRI the last couple of days, both the North and the South course. Half your luck. But, gee, have some fun out there. Have some fun out there at Tara Eady, and I can't wait to talk to you next week and get a full report.
Looking forward to it. Cheers.
Thanks for being part of Talk Birdie to Me with Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. And if you want to be part of the show, drop us a message or comment on the socials. Or you can send an email or leave a voicemail at talkbirdietome.com.au. Thanks to the great team at Ping, they're the best in the business and they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. If you're after top quality at prices you won't beat, check them out. golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Talk Birdie to Me's executive producer is Dan Bradley at Kaizen Media. Sound design, Daryl Misson at loudzebra.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.